I'm Gabby. Jules Gray Skies over West London. But Jules, what a show we have for you today. Because we thought it was just a quiet lead in International Week. Big sigh of relief for my people that went to the playoffs. Never play North Macedonia ever again. But we have to start somewhere else. We have to start at the Maracanã, at the home of football. Argentina beating Brazil 1-0. And from the footballing element, there's already a ton of things to talk about because this is Brazil's third defeat. It's their first ever defeat in a World Cup qualifier at the Maracanã. But to help us go through what happened off the pitch before the game, which is really quite remarkable, we're joined by Gustavo Hoffman of ESPN Brazil. Gustavo, I'm going to quickly describe what I think the flashpoint was. My understanding is the teams came out, they played the national anthem. During the anthem, in a portion of the stands where you had an organized sort of traveling group of Argentina fans and you had a group of Brazil fans, they started booing the anthem. Some trouble started. And then the police came in and the police started wielding batons. Things got violent. At that point, a bunch of Argentina players came over, also because some had relatives and family members in that group. We saw Dibu Martinez try to climb into the stands. Lionel Messi saying, all right, screw this. We're not playing, taking the people off the pitch. Then calm was restored. Is that pretty much an assessment? Have I missed anything?
Hello, guys. Thank you for having me here. It's always a pleasure. Well, yes, that's the scenario. That's the sad scenario that we have at Maracanã. We had a high expectation for this match to see if Brazil would recover from their losses, if Argentina would recover from its loss, also from Uruguay. It's one of the biggest clásicos in the world football for us in South America. It's the biggest clásico ever that we can have. But what we saw at the stands of Maracanã was a shame. Was a shame, especially for Brazil, because the match was in Rio de Janeiro. The responsible for the organization was the Brazilian Federation with the police, with all the authorities related to the match. And we saw a huge brutality from the policy of Rio de Janeiro, the military police of Rio de Janeiro, against the Argentinian fans. The huge mistake committed by the organizers was to put all the fans together. Unfortunately, nowadays, with the scenario of violence in Brazil, in Argentina, in football, you cannot have Argentinian and Brazilian fans all together in the stands of a football stadium. That's sad to say that, unfortunately, but that's the truth. You have to deal with the truth. You cannot dream of a wonderful world, a beautiful stadium, everybody together, if you don't have this scenario at your society. And that's what happens with Brazil and Argentina, especially with the fans of football. So the huge mistake committed by the organizers was to put all the fans together. And then after that, we had the violence committed also between the fans and the brutality, as I said, by the policy of Rio de Janeiro. Inside the stadium, there were private security, like stewards, and the military police of the state of Rio de Janeiro. And what we saw at the stands, this brutality against the fans, the Brazilian fans are also used to. Because in Rio, it happens so many times with this police. We saw also this brutality in the streets and beats of Rio de Janeiro at the Libertadores final, when we had many, many troubles between Fluminense and Boca Juniors fans. So it was a real, real shame for Brazil what happened in Maracanã.
Gustavo, on the pitch, obviously, we saw a very physical match, the way you expect it to be between Brazil and Argentina. We saw a lot of the players eventually flying home together, because that's the way it often is. The European clubs pay for their flights. I'm guessing this. Do we have any information on how the flight back was? Are they just kind of stunned and annoyed that in some ways they have to witness these awful scenes before the game? Have you had any information on that?
No, I don't have. But the rivalry between Brazil and Argentina is, like I said, one of the biggest in the world, but especially with these players from Argentina and Brazil. I'm talking about these both teams, not about the history of this rivalry, but these players, they're creating a major rivalry between them, like Rodrigo de Paul. Rodrigo de Paul is a player who I know by sources between the Brazilian players, they don't like Rodrigo de Paul. They really don't like Rodrigo de Paul. We had many problems also with Richarlison. I'm sure you guys remember. Yeah. So we're talking about a giant rivalry between Brazil and Argentina historically, and a special rivalry between these players, these specifically players of Argentina nowadays, and also the Brazilian players.
I have to say, maybe naively, I was so excited by this game, boys. And maybe I should have known that it was not going to be a pretty, even before the game, because of the fact that Brazil had lost two games in a row, that the tension was quite high for Diniz, that you would expect them to go and be quite physical and aggressive to show Argentina that you and Rio and they were the boss and they had to win. I don't know, maybe the pressure. I just never expected to be such a bad game, I won't lie. I mean, 46 fouls in the whole game. In a game where the ball was probably in play less than 50 minutes. That's a foul by minute when the ball was actually in play. This is ridiculous. This is not... When you see the player and the talent on the pitch and then you watch it, and for us, we had to stay up quite late. The game kicked off obviously half an hour late because of all the trouble that we mentioned already and that we will mention a bit later. So already you stay up, you're excited... You have to wait another half hour for the game to start. And then it's like a parody of football. It's not even football.
Yeah, and then you see Messi going off early and contributing nothing. I want to ask Gustavo, though. This is Jules' assessment of the game. Does this photograph a little bit the state, or is it because the players were rattled and disturbed by what they saw beforehand?
Now, I'm convinced that this terrible football match happened because of what happened before at the stands. I think that the tension inside the Maracanã Stadium, the tension at the stands went to the field. So what we saw in the first half, for example, that was not football. That was not football. And we're not used to watch Brazil play like that. And, you know, when we talk about football, The idea of Brazil of high pressure, it worked well. They didn't let Argentina create so many chances. But it was a Brazilian team playing so hard, playing with violence, so many yellow cards, so many fouls. I'm convinced that the tension at the stands, the problems that happen at the stands, passed it to the players. The tension also passed it to the players. We saw Messi arguing with Rodrigo arguing.
Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that, and we're, Rodrigo is a very calm guy. He's a very nice guy. So for sure, the problems at the stands pass it to the field.
What is the Rodrigo Messi?
So he said when the game was about to restart, I think Gustavo, correct me if I'm wrong, but he seemed to be saying to De Paul and Messi, like, you cry babies, like, you know, what, like, all of this that happened just, and then, you could see Rodrigo and Messi hiding their mouth and talking to Rodrigo, but you could see they're quite aggressive. And apparently, some reports in Argentina saying they basically told him that we're world champions. Like, you know, this could have been a tragedy, what happened there. We didn't do this just because we didn't want to play this game. Like, you know, we are the world champions. We don't fear anybody, any teams. But yeah, this was an emergency. This was a kind of a crisis. But I don't know Rodrigo better than us, Gustavo. I mean, it was even strange from Rodrigo to almost start like dissing Messi and De Paul of what had just happened.
I could see Vinicius doing it, not Rodrigo.
Yeah, Rodrigo.
Yeah, that's what I said. Rodrigo's a very nice guy, very, very calm guy. We don't see Rodrigo going to many trouble in football matches with Real Madrid or the Brazilian team. That's why I said that the tension from the stands went to the field because the Brazilian team was too pressed because the pressure over Brazil because of the bad results before. So this team went to the match already feeling depression. Brazil for the first time lost now 3 official matches in a row since 2001. Brazil didn't lose any 3 official matches in a row since 2001. that time lost four Mets in a row. Let's see what happens now. But the future of Fernando Diniz, people are talking about, we don't know what's going to happen with Fernando Diniz, with Carlo Ancelotti. People are discussing about the quality of the players. For you to know, guys, in Brazil, the fans, many fans, are saying that this is the worst Brazilian team ever. I don't think that that's the case.
There's a lot of injuries, remember, though, right? There's a lot of players missing at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I can remember some bad teams from Brazil, like the second tenor of Dunga ahead the Brazilian team. This team of 2001 that played the Confederations Cup. So we have talent. We have talent players for Brazil, but we need to make a team. And the scenario of waiting Carlo Ancelotti, this is the problem. The problem is when the CBF, the Brazilian Football Confederation, decided after the World Cup that we want Carlo Ancelotti. So we're going to wait for Carlo Ancelotti how much time, any time he needs. Then they thought that it could be possible to go with Ramon Menezes, the coach of the under-20 team. It was a mistake. After the matches again, the friendly match against the African teams, they saw that. So they decided to make a plan B or a plan C. So let's going to hire Fernando Diniz, the best Brazilian coach working in Brazil with Fluminense. They got Fernando Diniz and the things aren't working. Will Carlo Ancelotti be the Brazilian national team manager? They don't know. They have the yes. What we know that is that they have the yes from Carlo Ancelotti, but there's nothing signed. Of course that there's nothing signed because Ancelotti can't sign anything. Inside CBF, they still think that Ancelotti will be the manager. But what are we going to do in the next month? Brazil has two friendlies. Brazil has the Copa America. Brazil has some problems ahead.
All right, we should remind everybody, all those people who maybe are not Brazilian but are fans of Brazil and the green and gold, Brazil will still go to the World Cup because they have six spots out of 10, plus one in the playoffs. So the sky isn't falling, not yet. But on the Ancelotti point, and this is the part I really don't understand, and help me with it. As you said, Ancelotti's not allowed to sign anything until January 1st, regardless. I think, how can I put this in a way that won't get me in trouble? I think it's been made pretty clear to many people that if Real Madrid offer Ancelotti the chance to stay, his contract expires on June 30th, then he might stay. He might choose to stay. I think he said what my understanding is, I will very happily go and manage Brazil if my time isn't renewed at Madrid. What I don't understand is Ancelotti's contract with Real Madrid ends on June 30th, 2024. The Copa America begins on June 15th, 2024, right? The Champions League final, I think, is 2 weeks before that. I think La Liga, La Liga ends. How are they thinking that? How can the president of CBF saying Ancelotti will be here for the Copa America, blah, blah, blah? What is he thinking? Does he not understand the timescale? Is it smart to be saying these things?
Yeah, this is the problem. And we also say this, Gab, because, I also say that things in football change so quickly from one day to the other. So, we have, Carlo Ancelotti has said yes for us, but you have a whole season ahead of that. So many things can happen. Real Madrid can win the Champions League. They can push for Mbappé again. They have a very young team with players who have just renewed their contracts. So Carlo Ancelotti can change his mind if he really said yes, and that's what we know to CBF. And this time scale doesn't match. That really doesn't match. And Gabi, Brazil, the Brazilian Football Federation, underestimated the strength of their rivals in South America. They underestimated the qualifiers in South America. Will Brazil go to the World Cup? Of course. With seven spots, Brazil will go to the World Cup. But this is not the problem. The problem is how Brazil is playing, how poorly Brazil is playing, and what's going to happen. We don't have a team today. We have talented players, but don't have a team.
I think Gus is right. And again, there was a lot of players missing. So, you know, if everybody is fair,
it's a different team than the one that we saw against Argentina. But still, a team with Emerson Royal, a team with like some of those players who started that game. It's not Brazil. I mean, I don't know why I just picked on him. Because
yeah, why don't you pick on the guy who played center forward, the pretend center forward?
No, you don't like Gabriel Jesus. But even but the fact that Gabriel Jesus had not played for a month, was still injured when he was called up by Fernando Diniz, went still to the training camp, trained, and then he played. And okay, there was no setback. He played, all of that. But even that was strange.
What I don't follow here, Ed, this does also doesn't make any sense to me. Is okay, you want an interim manager because you believe you want Ancelotti. You know how Ancelotti has been playing at Real Madrid. Ancelotti isn't, he's not a guy, he's a very flexible manager. He can play very attacking football, he can play very defensive football. But you know the football he's been playing with Real Madrid the last couple of years, right? Why would you bring in a manager like Fernando Diniz, who, by the way, also has another job at the same time and a very time-consuming job because he won the Libertadores. Who plays a football, which I don't know if we want to call it 4-2-4. I don't know if that's what you call it, but it certainly is extremely attacking and it puts a lot of strain, I think, on the defenders. It's kind of like a high pressing game, which is difficult to do with a national team. It's easier to do with a club team, obviously, because you can train more and get your movements. What is the logic there?
Yeah. And Fernando Diniz thinks football completely different from Carlo Ancelotti. As you said, Ancelotti is a very flexible manager. Fernando Diniz, not. He's an unflexible manager because he thinks football in a specific way. And with Fluminense, it's working very well. But he needs time to practice with the players. He needs months. He needed many, many months with Fluminense to win a trophy. And they won the Copa Libertadores. Why did CBF bring Fernando Diniz? Because they thought that Ramon Menezes would be enough. This is the first point. They really thought that Ramon Menezes, an experienced coach who works with the under-20 team, would be enough for the Brazilian national team. Because with Tite, our former head coach, with Tite, everything was so easy at the qualifying that they thought that would be easy again with any manager.
Because Tite is a really, really good manager.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
So this is the first mistake. And then when they realized that Ramon Menezes could not go on as the Brazilian manager, they thought, oh, what can we do now? Let's bring the best Brazilian manager who is working in Brazil now. So who is this guy? Fernando Diniz. They didn't even think about the ideas of football that Fernando Diniz has and what Carlo Ancelotti thinks about football. Actually, I don't even think that Edinaldo Rodriguez, the Brazilian Football Federation president, knows how Carlo Ancelotti thinks football. I'm sure of that.
But he must have football technical directors, football advisors around him, even if he's not an expert.
No, Gab. No, they are not. They are not today, nowadays in Brazil, because after the departure of Tite, Juninho, it was Edu before, Juninho Paulista, the former Middlesbrough player. So nowadays in Brazil, everything is decided by Edinaldo Rodriguez, who was not a football player, who was always a politician inside the Brazilian football. So this is a really good point because I think that everybody's understanding how CBF works. With Tite and Edu Gaspar and then Juninho Paulista, we had the football team like separated from the politics in CBF. Nowadays, it's everything mixed.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It seems crazy, Jules, also because I don't think Carlo Ancelotti is greedy, but he's not cheap either. I'm assuming when he comes, he will probably be a massive investment, or if he comes, for the CBF, right? And why wouldn't you go and do all your research and your due diligence?
Yeah, it's a good point. And also, if he doesn't come, what do? Would you stick with Fernando Diniz now, but you want him as your national team head coach, so he has to give up on Fluminense? If he doesn't want to give up on Fluminense, what do? Do you go for somebody else?
No, I tell you what you do is you go on your knees to Tite's house and you say, Tite, please.
Come back.
Just for the Copa America. Just come back. Right? Is that a possibility?
Well, Fernando, Fernando Diniz will probably be the manager in Copa America, will probably be the manager till next year and to understand what happened. I think, Gab, no, another curious point. Fernando Diniz worked again yesterday because Fluminense played in the Brazilian championship.
That is Fluminense crazy.
It's crazy. And Fluminense beat São Paulo 1-0 with Germán Cano, the Argentinian forward, goal. So Fernando Diniz worked 2 days in a row in Brazil with the national team and then with his team. And I think that January will be when we really will know what's going to happen, because Brazil needs to know if Carlo Ancelotti will be the manager, and also Real Madrid needs to know what's going to be for the next season. Real Madrid won't wait for that. They need to know, will Carlo Ancelotti be the manager? Will they try to push for Xabi Alonso? Will be Raul? Who's going to be the Real Madrid manager next season?
I think from that part, Real Madrid can know very, very quickly. I think
it's cool anyway.
It's their call. So if they want to say, Carletto, can you stay another year? I think they can get this wrapped up very, very quickly.
Yeah.
If they want Xabi Alonso or Raul, then I think Raul would sign tomorrow, and you just have to give him the fare for the Metro to get the Valdebebas. That's easy. Xabi Alonso maybe might take some more effort.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Real Madrid can control this. I have zero sympathy for Real Madrid right now because they are in control.
Yeah.
I don't want to be too negative about Brazil. I'm going to ask you about Scaloni in a minute, but just to get us a little bit excited about what will be, to help Brazil fans out of their funk. It's the Copa America final, 2016. Everybody who can realistically be fit, sorry, 2016, 2024. Everybody who can realistically be fit for the final is fit. Can you tell me what you think the lineup is?
For the Copa America 2020.
Yeah, assuming everybody's fit who can realistically be fit, right?
Yeah, okay.
Because I want to show people that when you complain about Brazil, this is the worst team, we don't have the players, blah, blah, blah. No, you do have the players.
Compared
to Italy anyway. So tell me the lineup.
Goalkeeper, we have Alisson and Ederson, Liverpool and Manchester City.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, fullback at right, Danilo from Juventus. At left, who Brazil is really missing Danilo. At the left back, we can have Caio Henrique, for example, from Monaco.
Yeah, it's
the
good.
The defenders, Marquinhos, one of the best in the world, Bremer from Juventus. Gabriel Magalhães, who's playing for Arsenal.
Yeah.
In the midfield, we have Casemiro, we have Bruno Guimarães, we can have Joelinton again.
Paquetá.
Lucas Paquetá, for sure.
Well, if he's not banned for life. But
Exactly.
You said that, Bruno and Paquetá.
So, Lucas Paquetá as an offensive midfielder. And the forwards, we have Vinicius, Rodrigo, Martinelli, Endrick, who's going to be a Real Madrid player soon. So options we really have.
João Pedro, if you want a big man, yes.
Yeah.
And also,
Neymar, of course.
Will Neymar be fit for the Copa America? I don't know. That's a question. So Brazil fans, with this talent, it's kind of hard to screw it up once you get in the competition, once you get in the tournament.
It's
right?
not good not to win four games in a row. It's not, you know.
I agree.
The next game is against England and Gareth Southgate, so they should win that. Yeah.
It's a friendly. Stop being so.
Yeah, and Gabby, Jules, there's another curious point, because you remember I said that Brazil didn't lose three matches in a row since 2001. In that period, Brazil lost four in a row, two matches in the Confederations Cup, one at the qualifiers of South America to the World Cup, and the first at Copa America. The third loss in a row, it was for Uruguay in the South American qualifiers. Do you know what happened that day? It was the first match of Luis Felipe Scolari as Brazil manager. And with that match, Brazil started to work with Felipão, with Luis Felipe Scolari, and then won the World Cup in 2002.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well. But I think it's a little bit easier if you have Rivaldo, Ronaldinho, original Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Cafu, Roberto Carlos, yeah. On Scaloni, this has kind of been buried, but...
And Argentina overall as well for the game. Just before you go on Scaloni, because Argentina could have lost their head too. I mean, Rodrigo de Paul got slapped in the face literally twice in the first 15, 20 minutes of the game. I think, to be fair, whether you like Argentina or not, whether you... you know, you think they're good when they play with four midfielders who are McAllister, Lo Celso, Enzo, and Rodrigo De Paul, which is no pace at all. And then Messi, who clearly was not fully fit. It was pretty obvious.
When he plays badly, he's not fully fit.
And
okay.
It's just like, you could tell, I mean, he went to see the doctor twice in the first half hour of the game. So, and still lasted 75 minutes or so. But the credit they deserve was not to really, like, kind of exploded by first what happened before the game, and then also the way how aggressive Brazil were and all the fouls. I mean, at halftime there was, I think, 14 fouls from Brazil and 3 from Argentina. It was just like Gus was saying, it was really, really like a physical tough game from Brazil to Argentina. And yeah, Argentina stayed in the game. They won on the set piece. Otamendi, who we were like dissing on Monday show with the winning goal, great. But I think just before we go on Scaloni, I think they deserve credit, not because they played well, but because they kept their head cold and didn't lose it, like they could have easily done.
I think that's an excellent point. And Gustavo, I believe you used to cover Argentina. You've obviously seen them through the years. If there's an evolution to this Argentina team, it seems to me that, as Jules was saying, after winning the World Cup, or maybe even before that, maybe since Scaloni arrived, because we saw that in the game against Uruguay as well.
Yeah.
When things get nasty in the past, we've been used to Argentina kind of losing their heads a little bit. Now, it's like they may lose their heads once they're defeated. But while they're still in it, they stay in control and they maintain a lot more discipline than they would have in the past. Is that accurate?
Yes, it's accurate. They know their quality. They know that they are very good. They know that nowadays they're world champions. Everything began at Copa America in Brazil when they won Copa America, the first trophy won by Lionel Messi. At that time, I worked in this tournament specifically. I worked for ESPN Argentina because of the COVID, ESPN Argentina couldn't send any reporter for Brazil. So I worked the whole tournament for ESPN Argentina, covering Argentina. And I was in every match, every training that we could have access, talking to the players, talking to the press, the Argentinian press, to the manager. And I really saw at that tournament the turnaround for Argentina. There, they began to have a real good team. This is the difference now. They have a team. The players know what they have to do on the field. If you change the right back, if you don't play Molina, if you play the left back with Tagliafico or Marcos Acuña, if you play McAllister or Angel Di Maria on the left, they know what they have to do. They know their quality. They have a good coach. They have a leader in Lionel Messi. So they don't need anymore to appeal for the violence. If they're losing, if the other team is too aggressive, they know to play football. They know what they have to do. And they have a very good team. Everything that Brazil doesn't have now. We have the talent, but we don't have a team. Argentina has the talent and also has a very good team. So we were used to this kind of trouble with Argentina, always with the Argentinian fans against the Brazil. And what happened was that Brazil lost in this whole mess with Ancelotti, Fernando Diniz, CBF. The pressure is over who? It's over the players. It's over the players who go to the pitch and they're feeling this pressure. Argentina, no. Argentina are calm. They're confident. They know that they don't need to go into a mess on the pitch.
My theory here is that all of this is because Scaloni has Walter Samuel next to him on the pitch and he just scares the players. Anybody misbehaves, you deal with Walter Samuel and that does it. But it is a good point, because and this brings us to Scaloni and the job he's done. And at the beginning, when the streak started and they're doing well, I thought, okay, it's inertia. But now, Jules, I'm kind of rethinking this, because you know what? Otamendi scored a great goal, good leader, whatever, good first half of the season with Benfica last year, but it's still freaking Otamendi. Yeah. Lo Celso, who you see, right, who can't get on the pitch at Tottenham, even when they need him because Madison is out, right? These are the players, right? Messi, with the whole world of things that he forces you to do because he's older when you're not in possession. You know, you mentioned it there, Acuña, Tagliafico. I mean, nobody's going to write home about these guys, right?
No, for sure.
So this is not, I think, a super talented team. When the most talented, except for the forwards, if I was to ask you, who is the best player in Argentina who's not a forward? You would probably say, what, McAllister, Enzo, right? Something like that. right? Romero, yeah, when he's not getting sent off.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, we're not talking top 10 players in the world in any of these.
But to be fair, that like Gustavo explained, I think they just needed the team and the structure more than more talent than the greatest player of all time anyway, which they already have. And not for long, because there will be a point, a little bit of what we saw on Tuesday night, where he won't be able to do any more at that kind of level. For now, he's still fine, of course. But, and I think that's Scaloni's one. And to be fair, I went to sleep. I didn't wait for post-match press conferences or interviews and things like that. So I discovered Scaloni's comments after the game when I woke up the next day on Wednesday. And for him to say, yeah, I need to have a think now, you know, this team needs a manager with a head coach with a lot of energy. You know, we've played a lot, we've set the bar so high. And maybe he's tired now. And maybe also he knows that after winning the Copa America, the finalissima in a way, and the World Cup, no, but there's still three titles. He can't do better.
Okay, so Gustavo, I'm going to throw this to you now. So we don't know what decision Scaloni, I think there's also suggestions. I think his father has not been very well. He's obviously he's allowed to make whatever decision he thinks is best for his.
He's earned the right, yeah.
He's earned the right. There's no question there. I do wonder, do these people not talk to each other? If I'm Marcelo Gallardo,
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
Like, you can't wait another week before you say yes to Saudi and see if there's an opportunity there.
100%.
At least just a little bit, no? Yeah, for sure.
Are you going to change your mind?
No, it would be the best possible fit ever to replace Lionel Scaloni. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I think that, yes, Scaloni is tired. The match was tough. The pressure and everything that happened. I think that this whole environment, maybe it was too heavy for him that night. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he's going to leave. Now, today, I don't think that he's going to leave. Maybe not until the next Copa America. We have just a few months for the Copa America. We have two more friendlies in March, then friendlies in the Copa America. So the time is short also. I really don't think that he's going to leave now. Everybody was shocked by what he said. In Argentina, everybody was shocked because nobody ever said that maybe Scaloni will leave. Scaloni thinking that he's going to leave, because we also have many, many reportings inside the team. So this kind of news that people know before, maybe Scaloni thinking about to leave, but no, it was really shocking for everybody what I said.
Yeah, I gotta say this. Hopefully it's, all right, football in South America is physically and mentally exhausting. I've covered the Copa America. All right, we've obviously been in the World Cup. There's nothing, it's nothing like this in Europe. In Europe, it's a doddle, frankly. Yeah. He's got 4 months off now before the next game in March. It's summer in South America. I don't know where he goes. If he goes to
La Plata. He lives here. He lives here in Spain. He lives in Mallorca.
To get out of, well, Mallorca is okay.
It's the winter for him.
I know. But go enjoy some summer, man. Lionel, you're already there. Gustavo, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, enough South American stuff, which positively exhausts me. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, guys.
This was way back on Monday, Jules, but it took me several days to calm down. Such was the relief. A 0-0 draw in Germany against Ukraine, and Italy will get to defend their title at the Euro.
Yes.
But it came down to Cristante and Mudrik.
That's a penalty. 100%, 92nd minute. I was watching and I swear to you, I jumped off my sofa. Sure. I was like, oh my God, he's going to give it. Nothing. You were so lucky.
I said, this is it. This is North Macedonia again. I mean, except we'd have to go in the playoffs. But I thought it was a penalty in real time. If you watch the replays around enough times, it's a little bit like staring at, you know, those Rorschach tests that like the psychologist gives you?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like a big ink stain. And like, what do you see? Yeah. Then eventually you see one where there's no contact. In the real world, it's a penalty. I would love to know.
In for Ukraine a bit.
I would love to know whether they got caught in some VAR hell where it's like clear and obvious, whatever. But I do feel for them a little bit.
Yeah, I know. And Gab, you have a column up about this on the ESPN website. But for our listeners who can't read or who maybe don't have the internet or a computer or a phone,
but somehow can listen to this podcast.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. What do you make of this Italy team? Are they actually any good? And can they do well at the Euros again?
I think they can do well at the Euros because it's a knockout tournament, because Greece won it in 2004, because I don't think there's anybody who's really good and doesn't have evident weaknesses except for France, but then it can, they have Didier Deschamps. You can't rule it out. However, there are massive flaws and massive gaps of talent, and it's a shame because for me at least, they play attacking football, they play positive football, they could have scored two
against Ukraine. Yeah,
the first half, they dominated. Yeah. They could have scored two or three goals,
yeah,
but you can't put it in. And the reality for Italy, unless Scamacca suddenly becomes good.
Not the Scamacca that came on Monday night. That was horrible.
Raspadori can't get a start for Napoli. Moise Kean is more of a winger anyway and not particularly good. I'm serious. I was actually thinking about
the finishing,
this.
Yeah.
Ciro Immobile nobody likes, and he's injured and he's having his worst season and he's old now. So I was actually thinking we get into the world of Lorenzo Lucca, Pietro Pellegrini, all these guys.
No, Raspadori would be your starter, no?
Raspadori, what? The little Romario?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's be realistic now. It's going to be Pellegrini. Pellegrini's going to be fit. The cyborg will be back.
I've been waiting for him to get fit for the last 4 years.
Since he was 16.
Yeah.
North Macedonia, meanwhile, drew with England in that group, 1-1. Jules, you complained that England were terrible against Malta.
Yeah, they were.
Were they even worse in this game?
They were bad.
It doesn't matter.
It didn't matter because they were already qualified, they were already seeded, they would be in pot one for the draw on December the 2nd. So, no, in a way, it doesn't matter so much.
Maguire?
But it pains me, really, and it frustrates me that such a talented squad of player doesn't play better football than that. Even against a team that played with a low block like North Macedonia did, and we knew even if they were at home that they would play like that, that there's not much and you need an own goal in the second half to avoid defeat. You could have given another penalty because I'm sorry, the Maguire foul, the stumbling on Elmas. That's not a pen. It's beyond me. Yeah, Rico Lewis was good, I thought. Trent played okay. There was some good movement at times, but just not enough. And I just don't understand. I just don't know where this team is going.
But I'm sorry, but this is what we're talking about. We're talking about incomplete teams, right? If you were to just do a measure of talent, this would probably be the second best team in Europe, right?
Yeah.
However, when that talent is all in certain positions and at the back, and I'm sorry, Marque, absolutely fine, right? But is he on a par with the talent they have in other positions?
No, definitely not.
Maguire, let's not even get started.
Yeah.
Stones, maybe, when he's fit. And then beyond that.
Yeah, and Levi Colwill, for me, is the one.
Oh, Levi Colwill, who's at his first season at a big club, who's in and out.
Yeah.
This is what we're getting into. We're Kieran Trippier. You're like, oh, look, he's so good. It's still freaking Kieran Trippier, with all respect, right? Yeah. Like, compared to positions where you have Foden and Kane and whatnot. And
yeah, the wide players. No, for sure. I'm just, as you know, and I will repeat it again, for me, the problem is the manager anyway. Talking about manager, Uruguay beat up Bolivia 3-0, and that one scores again, another two goals. Gab, the great Marcelo Bielsa's experiment is working.
Yeah, it's funny because I still think this is, you talk about departures from the guy who came before you, or not so much Diego Alonso, but before that, under the Professor Tavares. This is what Bielsa is all about. They seem to be having fun. They're running themselves into the ground. It's perfect for Darwin Nunez.
Yeah.
It's absolutely perfect for his style of football. Can this work in a tournament setting down the road? This was Bielsa's undoing until 2002.
Yeah.
I don't know, but for now, it is a lot of fun to watch, and they're really, really good. And I'll tell you what, they're second right now. They could top South American qualifying. France do not finish their Euro qualifying campaign as perfect, unlike Portugal and Cristiano.
Yeah.
As they are held 2-2 by Greece. Jules, Kylian Mbappe came off the bench. But they still looked like a pretty good team. I would say first 11. Yeah. There's no magic mic between the sticks, but still, it's pretty good.
It was
what
good.
Happened?
It was good. It was good. I think they just switched off on the just after the break where they conceded 2 goals in 5 minutes, 2 poor goals to concede. Jules Koundé getting nutmegged. Remember when Brian Zaragoza did him the other day in La Liga? Well, it was the same in this game. And
it's
then
getting
the
a habit with Jules Koundé.
Yeah, I know. He should maybe focus a bit less on his dress sense and a bit more on the football pitch. But that was not good, that nutmeg. But then France came back. And as we will see in the next quick hit, they should have also won it. But it was not bad. You take as long as you don't lose, at least. Kylian came off the bench, almost scored to win it as well. So... It's okay.
Huh?
And as we mentioned, Gabby, France would have won this game if goal line technology had been in place and judged that Kingsley Coman's defective cross had crossed the line, but it didn't because there was no goal line technology in this game. Why not? And Antoine Griezmann was pretty unhappy about it.
So, first of all, they have VAR, and I don't think it's definitely conclusive via VAR that the ball crossed the line, right? So, Antoine Griezmann says, oh, UEFA have so much money, they should put this in. So the reason it's not in is because goal line technology depends on the stadium that you play in, right? On the hosts and stuff. And the thinking, and so they don't have goal line technology in all of Euro qualifying because they want to have a level playing field for everybody. And installing goal line technology on one wherever Liechtenstein or Andorra play their home games is expensive. And they're not going to use it. So that's the reality, Antoine. So as long as you have very small countries in UEFA participating in these, you're not going to have goal line technology. Guess what? I'm totally fine with it. Chill. I don't care. You shouldn't care either. More bad news for our boy Julian Nagelsmann, Jules. Leroy Sané gets sent off early in the second half.
Yeah.
And they lose to Austria 2-0. How bad is it really?
I mean, okay, you played the whole second half pretty much, let's say, at 10 against 11 because Leroy Sané was sent off for a stupid altercation with Mwene.
Yeah, you know, if you're going to push somebody, first of all, you find Jose, but don't do it in such a way that you hit him in the face when
exactly.
you push him.
Even if you're taller than him.
Push down.
They were already a goal down by that time. Sabitzer scored. They were not good in the first half. They were not good at 10 with 10 men. I know it's a process, I'm sure, and we've explained when he was appointed that as a manager himself, it's all about the process and all about details and all about working.
Trust the process.
That 4-2-2-2 is not going to get put in place on its own, really. That 4-2-2-2 is just not working right now at all, and even less when you've got Kai Havertz at left back.
And so. You're not going to diss Kimmich and Gundogan again?
No, because it was not them playing. Goretzka and Gundogan played, and it was not much better this time. So
exactly.
I don't know what to say. I mean, there's a lot of work to do there. And Nagelsmann is also, Gabby, getting killed for appearing to tell his goalkeeper, Kevin Trapp, to fake an injury.
So this is not a good look, but he kind of made it worse. So what happened was Leroy Sané gets himself sent off. They're not expecting it. So they're all in a tizzy, and they're thinking, all right, we need to send tactical instructions. How are we going to fix this? Blah, blah, blah. And because if a goalkeeper is injured, it's the only position where they're apparently not required to get treated off the pitch. Everybody else, a referee, will ask you to go off the pitch with the goalkeeper. Obviously, the reasons they don't do that. John Terry incidentally came out and said, oh, Mourinho had us do this all the time, right? So he appears to wave his arm to kind of tell him to stay down. It's not a good look.
Nah.
I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what he meant. He made it worse afterwards by not addressing it.
Yeah.
The Austrian media are really angry about it. Dude, just address it. Just say hey guys, it's in the rule book. I took advantage of it. Does it make me a bad person?
I
know. But don't, this makes it seem like he's got something to hide. Don't do it.
I know.
Jules, you love to make fun of Dutch football, but they did beat Gibraltar in Gibraltar 6-0 with Calvin Stengs bagging a hat trick. And when France played Gibraltar in Gibraltar, it was only 3-0 and you needed a penalty and an own goal.
Yeah, because we stopped playing not to humiliate them.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Why, that's
like you
was
did
only
in the
three.
Return leg.
That's why it was only 3. The Dutch and the Dutch guy clearly thought, let's go and keep scoring. I'm happy for Calvin Stengs because he came to France and Nice and didn't work out for him. Now he's back home and it's much better. Well done to them. And you know what? They're in pot three, the Dutch, for the draw of the Euros on December 2nd. And I would not want to face them. I won't lie.
Calvin Stengs is my second favorite footballer named Calvin.
After
Calvin Bassi, but that's because Calvin Bassi is actually Italian.
Okay, fair enough. According to a newspaper report in England, Manchester City and Manchester United could both be out of the Champions League next season if, that's a big if, Girona and Nice finish higher than they do. Gab, what is this all about?
So this is assuming Sir Jim Ratcliffe takes over United, which, by the way, that's now slid. Apparently, we're not going to get a resolution on this until next week. But as you know, they do have multi-club ownership rules under effect. It certainly looked as if Cefrin has gone softer on it and is much more tolerant of it. However, as the rules stand, according to the UEFA source cited in this story, if two teams with the same owner both qualify for the Champions League, then the one that finishes higher in their respective league, in their league, gets to play in the Champions League, and the other one has to play in the Europa League. So hypothetically, if Girona finish second and Manchester City finish third, Manchester City not allowed in the Champions League. And equally, United getting in the top four, I don't think you believe that'll happen, but if Nice finish higher than United, it would be the same thing. Now, do I think this is going to happen? No, because I think they'll find some logical workaround, because I think that's the direction of travel. But as the law stands today, according to this guy, that's exactly what would happen, which would be adding insult to injury.
It would be.
The Premier League will not be banning related party loans this January, which means in theory that Newcastle could raid the Saudi Pro League for top talent.
That's right.
From Ruben Neves to Karim Benzema.
To Cristiano.
Jules, there wasn't enough support among the owners, apparently.
Yeah.
That's not really surprising, right?
Yeah, so you need 14 of the 20 Premier League clubs to vote in favour. And we only had 12 on this 13 on this count, 12 on another vote. Let me think. Maybe if you were an owner of a Premier League club who also had other teams, other clubs, why would you vote in favour of this? And guess how many clubs in the Premier League are involved in multi-club ownership?
We've had this before. What is it? 9? 10?
Yeah, 10. It's half of them. So
it's crazy.
It's crazy. So they were never going to vote against something that could to be to the detriment at some point. I don't know where you stand. I mean, to be fair, I don't care that much. I don't think Newcastle are going to take full advantage of it. But
no, and they also have something called the fair market value test, which they've now introduced precisely to avoid these kind of situations. So essentially, if Newcastle take Karim Benzema on loan, they can't just get him for free. Like, they would have to, they would have a bunch of nerds sitting together. All right, what would it actually cost you and so on? And it has to approach fair value. It's not ideal. But you know what? Once you allow this multi-club ownership everywhere, this is what you're going to get.
Exactly. The USA advanced to the CONCACAF Nations League semifinal on aggregate despite losing to Trinidad and Tobago 2-1 away. But Gab, what was up with Serginho Dest?
So first of all, he's the first U.S. national team player in history to get two red cards in a single calendar year.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
As I discovered from watching Seb and Herc on the America show. So essentially, at one point, he's unhappy with an officiating decision.
Yeah.
And he goes and he just punched the ball seemingly out of the stadium.
Yeah, who's the ball?
And then he continues to argue, even if he's walking off the pitch, he's still talking to the referee, arguing. And to make it even worse, he has his hand over his mouth, which when you do that talking to another player, fine. It's because you don't want the cameras picking up. When you were talking to a referee, it really makes you wonder, what are you saying?
Yeah,
what
do exactly.
you
need?
Well, you know, what are you hiding here? It also shows that, you know, you're not out of control. I think it's embarrassing. His players really let him have it. Greg Berhalter was really, really
Ream
tough on him.
As well, Turner.
Tim Ream, not happy. Yeah. Look, if you want to play for the U.S., you got to do better. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/GabJules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/GABJULS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/GabJules. Cards for the set in the Premier League are way up this season, and yep. Howard Webb, the boss of the Premier League referees, says his match officials will continue to take a hard line. Jules, is he right to do so?
I think so, Gab. I think so. I don't want to see like players being all around the referees, shouting at them, insulting them. You can clearly see as well with the swear words in English what they're saying. You know, it's not difficult to read on their lips, even if you don't have the sound. That's not good. It's not good for us watching. If you're in the stadium, if your kids are watching, anything. And it's not nice for the referees either. It doesn't put like a good atmosphere within the game. So
no, you know what I like most about this is in the past, we've had situations where they said, oh, we're going to enforce this, we're going to enforce that. And they do it for 3-4 weeks and then people complain.
And yeah, and so they stop. Yeah.
Howard Webb, maybe it's because he's a bald guy, maybe because he's an ex-cop, maybe he's a tough guy. I don't know. But he's saying like, no, we're sticking for it. I remember when he said he was going to do this in the summer, I was at a press conference of the Premier League, and the buzz was, oh, yeah, but, you know, they always say this, and then after a couple of weeks, it goes back to normal. And no, it's not going to be like this.
No,
whether you agree with it or not, sticking with it.
The same panel that gave Everton that 10-point deduction for violating the profit and sustainability rules will also rule on the compensation claim from the clubs affected by the decision. So remember the clubs who are going to sue Everton, like Burnley at the time, like Leeds, yeah, etc. Well, it would be the same panel. And that's strange in itself, right? Everton are not happy and the fans are not happy.
Yeah, no, they're not happy. By the way, Everton have yet to appeal this decision, so it could be that they get let off, although I mean, most people don't expect that because they did actually breach. Maybe the 10 points will change. I don't know why it needs to be the same people that go and adjudge this. I don't, you know, people said, oh, but it was such a complicated decision with Everton. Well, first of all, I don't see why it's complicated because it's purely an accounting thing. But beyond that, you're assessing something different. You're assessing the size of their claim. You're not assessing whether Everton breached.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So you don't need the same people to do it. It's not a good look. And
one of the guy on the panel is a QC who I think represented Leeds before, something like that. So he's already worked for Leeds, being paid by Leeds before. And now he's the one supposed to put a number on the Leeds claim.
Yeah, his name is Phillips, I think. And it's not clear if Leeds will be one of the parties that are going to be awarded compensation. He represented Leeds, I think, back in 2005, something like that. And he's a KC, not a QC.
Oh, sorry. What did I say? Oh, I say, okay.
But yeah, I take your point. It's an unnecessary thing. Like, I don't have an issue. I don't think that is such a big deal because, you know, the guy's a barrister, right? Which means he's the guy. He's not a normal lawyer, right? He's the guy that argues for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not like he's their club lawyer or in-house counsel or what. These guys are hired guns, right?
Yeah. He's a big guy.
You know my feelings on law. Like, these guys would represent anybody because it's kind of their job, right? You pay them and like blah, blah, blah. However, again, not a good look. And when it's really important that you be seen to be fair, you don't want to give Everton fans any reason to be upset.
I know.
But now they're even more upset. And in fact, they're planning significant protests against the Premier League when they face Manchester United on Sunday.
Yeah.
Jules reports that broadcasters are going to lower the crowd noise. Are you okay with this?
No, not really. I think people should have the right to express themselves. I don't know if they're going to swear massively or not. I don't know what they're going to say. I don't know what the protest is going to be. At the end of the England game against North Macedonia, at the end when they were doing the post-match analysis on English TV, you could hear the fans singing a swear words with that channel and saying that the coverage was not very good. But right, so you could hear it clearly. So even if you're watching on television, you could easily hear clearly at times whatever they're singing, swearing, etc. So maybe they don't want that. I don't know. Do they know already what the protest is going to be and what they're going to
sing? I don't know. But frankly, you know what? The reason fans pay a lot of money to be able to watch games on television is as a substitute or for being there. It's not a substitute, but the same thing, right? Mm. So, and I also think you do have, I don't think this is just entertainment. I think there is also a reporting journalistic element to it. So for you to go and lower the, I hope they don't do this, because for you to lower the sounds or to try to sanitize this, except for in extreme libelous situations, I think is really doing a disservice to your audience, especially when they know what's going on. And especially since, you know what, Jules, it's 2023. Right, whatever they mute or lower the sound of is going to be all over social media.
Yeah, you're right, exactly.
So, what's the point?
Yeah, Mikel Arteta has been given more time to reply to the FA charge after his rant against referees following the defeat at Newcastle. Gab, do you understand why he needs more time?
No, I don't. There's been an international break, dude. You've had like 10 days, and I know, you know what? I don't think it's him. I think it's probably, and I'm purely speculating here, it's a combination. I think, you know, he's like, I said what I said. Then the club doubles down with their statement, so the club must have a strategy. So it's the club lawyers saying, oh, what should we, how do we answer this FA charge? And these are lawyers, so they like to take more time than usual because they like to bill their clients more and make it seem like what they're, like their job is so freaking difficult. But I don't think it's Mikel Arteta who's the holdup here. Not one bit. Sorry, I just had to get another dig on lawyers.
Of course.
Jules, you got a big Welsh heart underneath that French exterior, so you must have been gutted by that late penalty awarded to Turkey, which means it finished 1-1.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have changed anything even if they won that game, because Croatia won in the same time against Armenia, so it doesn't matter so much. The Ben Davies, very, very, very generous
very soft
penalty, very soft, given by the referee. But even if they were disappointed by the draw, it was such a good performance from Wales overall. I mean, I know Turkey were already qualified, but they were not sure to top the group. And by the way, they're not topping the group. Oh no, they still are topping the group. But it was very encouraging the way they played. So they will take that into the playoff because, Gabby...
I'm sorry, and that was a big response too, because they were very disappointing.
Against Armenia.
Against Armenia, Brendan Johnson missing those chances.
Yeah, that's where they lost that direct qualifications, because now they end up in the playoffs. Gabby, and here's the draw, and it's prediction time.
All right, let's do this together to make it even more exciting.
So, let's start with Poland and Estonia, and Wales and Finland, which are the path A.
So these are single leg games. There's no home and away. You only play one leg, so obviously a big advantage of the home sides. I assume it's Poland and Wales.
Yeah? I assume so too. Yeah.
And then Wales, that would mean that Wales would play at home against Poland, because again, there are higher seated in this extremely convoluted system that only Dale Johnson and Giorgio Marchetti understand. Wales against Poland.
And Wales and Ben Davies, our friend Ben Davies, are going to go through.
All right, there you go.
Then we've got Israel against Iceland and Bosnia against Ukraine in the semifinals of Path B.
Is it Bosnia at home rather than Ukraine? It's Ukraine at home, no?
Bosnia
at home, yes. Okay, well, we're going to have to figure out where to play Israel and Iceland. Yeah, although, to be fair, this is in March, so, you know, let's pray that that situation there is over, maybe, hopefully. Iceland have been so disappointing after years of telling us how smart and how good they were. I have Israel and Ukraine advancing.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know what, and then Ukraine playing at home. Again, hopefully we'll be at home. I won't be at home. Yeah. Most likely it'll be in Germany and Ukraine. Being Israel.
I agree with you. And then finally, Georgia against Luxembourg and Greece against Kazakhstan in Path C.
Okay, so Georgia, I want to see Kvaratskhelia at the Euros. I got to see that. Luxembourg, you guys did really, really well. Double figures in points.
Yeah, yeah.
But come on, we want Kvara.
Yeah. Georgia. And then Greece against Kazakhstan?
It would be really cool to have Kazakhstan at the Euros, but I can't go against my brothers from another mother.
Yeah.
Come on, man. So it's Greece against Georgia, and I'm going to go Team Vlachodimos to upset Team Kvara. That game is actually in Georgia, I think.
Yeah, and Georgia have a French manager in Willy Sagnol, of course. So I go for Big Willy.
Not just a friend. He's little, though. He's not big.
He's a big head coach. He's a good head coach.
But who's smaller, him or Lizarazu?
No, Lizarazu. Willy Sagnol is not small. He's not short. Lizarazu is not Sagnol.
All right.
So I go for Georgia for me. So this is the difference that we have.
Georgia and Greece.
Yeah. Let's see.
Barcelona keep rolling in the Women's Champions League. Jules Salma Parihuelo bags two, and they come from behind to win 3-1 away to Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, they made it hard for them to a little bit, because they were 1-0 down at halftime, like you said, Gabby. But that second half was really good, the way they moved the ball. I thought Frankfurt were a little bit naive, maybe tired from the first half and all the efforts. So in the end, it's a good win. It's such a talented team. It's such a pleasure to watch them play. So well done to them. Venezuela hold Peru to a 1-1 draw in Lima, but Gab Nahuel Ferraresi says that he was hit twice by a Peruvian police officer when he tried to approach his fans in the stand after the game. You can check out the video, you see it. The fans arrive, and the players arrive, and the video is from the fans' point of view. If you want down towards where the players are, you can see the police almost gathering around the players and being nasty.
Yeah, so it's a shame that we have to talk about another incident like this in the South American qualifiers after what happened at the Maracanã. I hope there's a full investigation here, because Venezuela really, really angry about this. They said that their fans had to submit to migrant compliance checks on their way in.
So bad.
They said that they claimed that their plane was delayed in leaving. Afterwards, there was some issue with refueling. Say it's all an excuse, but fundamentally, one of the great things about international football, and in fact about football in general, which I absolutely love, is after a result, when the players go over and thank the fans and celebrate with the fans, especially the traveling fans in this case. And for this guy to go over and to have, you know, some fool with a badge and a baton hitting him, that's not acceptable.
That's not.
What do you think they were going to do, the Venezuela fans? Riot? Come on, man. hopefully there's a full investigation here.
Yeah.
Football League's hacker Rui Pinto was convicted in a Paris court for hacking into Paris Saint-Germain executives and making private information public. However, this is one of those convictions with a twist, Jules. Because his punishment, he gets a 6-month suspended sentence, which basically means don't commit a crime and you're good. And then he has to pay damages of €1 to Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, that's
plus
right.
Court costs of a couple thousand. I'm afraid to say the court has a lot of sympathy here.
Yeah,
right?
It maybe comes down to the fact that he's cooperating heavily with all the investigations, everything, everywhere. Maybe it's that, or maybe like his lawyer said, his French lawyer said, oh, look at him, he's got still a child's face.
He had a child's face when he was 25, 10 years ago, and was doing this, but he still has a child's face.
So I don't know. He stole stuff on Angel Di Maria and Javier Pastore, who at the time were maybe not paying the taxes like they should, or some kind of fraud like this. And then on PSG's, apparently for their recruitment for their academy, that there were some quotas involved and they maybe didn't want too many players from similar background or similar color and that kind of stuff.
If you didn't want black players,
yeah,
too many black
exactly,
players.
Which is mad, really. But hey, I think he's got bigger fish
to fry.
Yeah,
well, he's already had the 3-year conviction in Portugal, which of course has been suspended as well.
Yeah,
it's funny, when he says he's cooperating with the authorities, I suspect there's more to this, because he always says, oh no, it's just... Well, originally he said, no, I wasn't hacking the information. People were giving me the information.
Yes. I remember that.
Now I think it's pretty much been established that he's hacking, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If he's hacking, he's doing it on his own. So when he's cooperating, when you hear about people who are cooperating, right, who do a deal with prosecutors,
yeah, usually
it's
like
because
give names,
they're identifying names of other people. So... I still think there's more to come on this. We still don't know, because the amount of hacking he's done, either this guy is a freaking genius, Matthew Broderick in War Games or something.
Yeah.
But I don't think he is, right? So I think there are people who were working with him.
Maybe.
Otherwise, what the hell are you cooperating on?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. Inter Miami have denied reports that they plan to play in a preseason tournament in Saudi Arabia that could have seen Leo Messi face Cristiano Ronaldo. What's going on?
Well, this is weird to me, because you know what? Maybe they've denied those reports, but they should be doing it.
I don't know. Everybody would want to see this.
It's a massive commercial operation. There's even like David Beckham in the interview at the Times that he talked about choosing Inter Miami's pink strip.
Yeah.
Which, the only other, I think, high-profile football club that wears it is Palermo.
Palermo.
The pink and black attack.
Of course.
Owned by... City Football Group, there you go. So if they finish higher than Manchester City, well, anyway.
Yeah.
it would be stupid not to, right? You signed him to promote your league and to publicize and whatever. So maybe they haven't agreed it yet, but if they haven't...
Those reports don't come out. Like, they were, you know, they were...
Maybe they haven't agreed it yet. Yeah. Maybe they will agree it. I mean, you'd be stupid not to.
I agree.
Unless you think there might be some political reason you don't want to, the climate, your owners, it's a bad look for whatever reason. But otherwise, maybe you'd be foolish not to.
Yeah, I agree.
Assuming, by the way, we don't know this, assuming the Saudis want you, because let's not forget, Lionel Messi said no to Saudi Arabia to go to Inter Miami.
True, but he's, he's an ambassador for the tourism.
Yeah, but they signed the contract already. They can't take it back. But
I know. It will happen.
Jose Mourinho, you knew he was going to be in the show, thinks that one day he will work in the Saudi Pro League, but not anytime soon.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
He says, not today, not tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
And he says that if Florentino asks Carlo Ancelotti to stay, then he thinks that Carletto will stay at Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Jose also said that he left Real Madrid even though the club begged him to stay.
Of course he did.
Which
he begged at the time, Jose, you had a lot of people in that club and in that dressing room against you, really. I'm not sure they begged you to stay. I mean, him in Saudi, I think it's pretty obvious that it will happen at some point. And I even can tell you that it will happen even quicker than Jose himself says. It could well be tomorrow.
Not tomorrow,
but at the end of the season.
Well, his contract with Roma is up, and they asked him again, like, oh, like, did you talk to the free kids club owners? He's like, yeah, we talked to them. I talked to them about planning and stuff. And did you talk to them about getting a new contract? And he's like, no.
Exactly. So I'm not surprised if Uncle George at some point brings him back over there or takes him over there. Carlo Ancelotti stays. We've said that before. It's pretty obvious, and everybody could tell you that if he's offered another contract with Real Madrid, he will stay. So, but it's always good when Jose talks.
It's always entertaining. Always exactly. Good.
Javier Tebas has resigned as president of La Liga. Gab, does this mean that Florentino Perez and Joan Laporta are celebrating with champagne and party and caviar?
No, it does not. He basically, under the rules of La Liga, you have to resign before your term ends, so that you can call new elections, so you can get another term.
You can go again.
He wants a fourth term, and he's going to run for it, and I assume he's going to get it, because I'll tell you what, while there are a lot of people who don't like him for many different reasons, and I think he said and done things that I personally disagree with.
Yeah, me too.
But when you look at the health of La Liga and the impact that, for example, their salary cap has had, when you look at where they are, despite the fact, I mean, if I was to ask you now, right, who are the biggest stars in La Liga, right? You would probably say, other than Griezmann, of course, you have him at number one.
Of course.
No, but Cristiano and Messi are gone.
Yeah.
Long gone. You know, you're doing Vinicius.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, still.
Lewandowski, right?
Yeah.
It's not where they were, and yet La Liga continues to be, you know, I think a successful television product,
for sure.
And they're stable, and they're getting investment. You know, I don't even know who the dude before him was, but they're also really having a voice in the in the conversation, and I think that's important.
Yeah,
André Villas-Boas is running for president of Porto, Jules, and his house was vandalized twice in one night, with his housekeeper being attacked and graffiti being sprayed all over the gate.
And they.
Unsurprisingly, some feel the two things are related.
Yeah, you're right, Gab. I mean, it must have been pretty scary from the way Villas-Boas kind of reported it.
He wasn't there.
No, and put it on his social media accounts. It sounded really, really bad. The graffitis, as you said, and tagging stuff on the walls, and then waiting for his collaborator, he calls him, or the housekeeper, to come out and, like, beating him up kind of thing and stealing stuff.
I'm going to be careful here, but one of the allegations that is swirling around, this is completely unconfirmed, is that this was a visit from Porto ultras who don't like Villas-Boas.
Okay.
Now, he's running for president against your pal Pinto da Costa.
The historical Pinto da Costa.
Who has been president since 1982.
No, that's too long.
Now, this is an elected position. Some might say, well, we love the club election model, rather than the rich owner model.
Yeah.
You also end up with situations like these.
I mean, you should not be able to run, like, what? How many times in a row now?
I'm guessing the ultras really dislike Villas-Boas. Maybe they like Pinto da Costa. I don't know.
Maybe.
But it's an ugly situation, and he deserves better.
Yeah. Gab, who is Fabio Paim And what has he done to upset Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah. Okay, well, first of all, he's more famous now than he used to be. But he was on a podcast in Portugal. So he's a guy who, as a young man, he played for Sporting. I think he's 2 years younger than...
He's a bit of a prodigy. Yeah.
...than Cristiano. He's supposedly a prodigy. Ended up going to Chelsea very young. Never quite worked out. But he's in this podcast, and he said, look, I was a really talented player. He said, I knew Cristiano really well because we were there together. Although, again... Age-wise, Cristiano's several years, so I think he looked up to Cristiano. But he said, I could have been like Cristiano if I had half his brain, which I take as a compliment to Cristiano, saying that, like, this guy was maybe an idiot, he screwed around,
definitely.
Whereas Cristiano's dedicated and intelligent to a sport, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then he joked.
Until then, that was fine. It's the joke after that.
The joke where he said, like, you know, he said, I deserve one of his Ballon d'Ors. Like, maybe he means that he would have won one of the many. Cristiano does not see the humor in it.
He said, like, it would not have been Messi and Cristiano. It would have been Messi and me, as in, like, dominating the football world for 15 years.
He's so obviously,
like,
joking, right?
Come on.
No, seriously. I know, he's joking. But Cristiano doesn't see the humor. He writes, WTF, who is this guy? Which, you know, Cristiano, chill. Okay, why this guy's not casting shade on you.
Oh, no, exactly.
Complimenting
don't
you.
Bother about that.
Yeah,
huh?
No
don't
need
bother.
To punch down.
No, exactly.
Jules, that brings us to an end.
Oh.
Huge game this weekend. I won't be here on Monday because I'm on assignment, but Nader Manua will be filling in to tell you all about Liverpool and Manchester City. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.